Good evening, friends and brethren. Very good to see you tonight. When I was working on this lesson, one concern that I had is tonight I want to mention some things about the church in Elkton, Tennessee. I'm not here to preach to you about the church in Elkton, Tennessee. But because of some things I want to share with you in this lesson tonight, you're going to hear some things about the church there. And I always find it to be kind of a risky thing for anything to sound like you're comparing one church to another. And that's not the purpose or intent tonight in any way. And I just kind of mentioned that in the beginning of this lesson. But really when I talk tonight, tonight's lesson is kind of part two of this morning, Sowing the Seed. And talking more about or presenting some information tonight about the work of our Lord in Boston, Massachusetts. Sandra and I spent 4 days up there recently with a young man and his wife that had worked with me several years ago. There's some personal connections there, but there's some important lessons to be learned from what's going on as far as the church activity there, what is happening. And so I want to start off tonight by just talking about preaching some. And this part of the lesson is just a lesson, some things we need to think about with regard to preaching. You know, there are a lot of thoughts and considerations that come to mind when a preacher thinks about where he should go and to do his work. I mean, how does the sower know where to go? And I've shared some thoughts with you about this already. It's a hard choice. There's some hard decisions to be made when you're contemplating making a move from one place to another. Like, how do you know when it's time to move? And how do you know where to go? And, you know, when should you go? And what if going somewhere disrupts your family? What if it's difficult on your family? And what if it separates you from loved ones and from brethren that you hold dear? How does that play into the decision? Or should it fall into the decision at all? Now, I'll tell you, I think all of these are fair considerations, serious ones, but none of those are really overbearing in what needs to be done as far as the work of the kingdom. As to the sower, we'll be focused on the need of the kingdom and looking for opportunities to preach in a lost and dying world and where you might find yourself most effective. And so that becomes the focal point of decisions to be made. It's like I've said before, no one said that preaching was easy. I have been most impressed over time with young men who have made the choice and made the decision to willingly devote their lives to serving the Lord in the way of preaching the gospel. Men who make the choice to preach, knowing the difficulties that it brings and the sacrifices that are sometimes not always visible to everyone. Especially impressive to me are those who choose to work in locations where the church is not necessarily strong, places where the work will be slow and where the work will be hard, or maybe going someplace where the Lord's work is not known at all and working to establish a church there. We need not to forget that it is important that we get to know some of these men and encourage them in their work and encourage their families as well. For the work that they are doing to accomplish some good things for the Lord. There's an evangelist named Timothy that we read about in Scripture that's particularly impressive to me. You know, he was probably just a teenager when he started traveling with the Apostle Paul. And it's just hard for me to imagine what it would have been like to have been a young Timothy and there to be someone as the Apostle Paul to come into town preaching, and you listen, you are convicted by the things that he says, already having some good upbringing Timothy did himself. He already knew some things about the Scripture. But still, you know, being so committed to the cause of Christ that he is willing to leave his family and leave where he was raised and follow the Apostle to who knows where. Quite literally, to who knows where, because who knew where the apostle was going to be going next and what he was going to be doing. And so I've tried to just imagine. And that at times, Timothy must have wondered, what have I got myself into? And what's going to happen next? And where will we go next? Or will we be killed even right here where we are? And so that the challenges that would lie ahead for him were just beyond even what he could have imagined, I'm sure. And no doubt, he faced discouragements, But there was the support of the apostle that was always there and always present. The apostle calling Timothy, in fact, my true son in the faith, which tells us something, which in fact tells us a lot even about the relationship of the apostle to this young evangelist. But you know, even that close kinship did not mean that they would always work together. We're going to 1 Timothy chapter 1 and looking at a couple of passages here as the apostle is writing back now to the young preacher Timothy. 1 Timothy chapter 1 at verse 3, where he says, as I urged you when I went into Macedonia, remain in Ephesus that you may charge some that they teach no other doctrine, nor give heed to fables and endless genealogies, which cause disputes rather than godly edification, which is in faith. And so we can identify the fact that Paul has left Timothy back in Ephesus. He's there alone now. And I don't know exactly how long he had traveled with Paul. They'd had some time together, surely. But now he's being left back, and a charge is being given to him. Here's what you have to do. You know, that you're going to have to stand up, and you're going to have to deal with some issues, and charge those that they should teach no other doctrine. And imagine even the responsibility and the pressure that's been put on this young evangelist. And yet I don't see anything that makes me think that he shrank back in any way, but that he stood up to the responsibility that was there. But you just try to imagine how that young man felt, having been taught and prepared for the work, but now he's feeling the full weight of that responsibility. Where in times past, you know, if the questions got too hard, he could just turn to Paul and say, Brother Paul, answer the question. But now he's there, left alone. And how he would feel with that. Paul continued to encourage him in that work, still there in 1 Timothy. Look at chapter 4, verse 11, we take up reading. And these things command and teach, let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Until I come, give attention to reading, to exhortation, and to doctrine. Again, it's a reminder, here's what you have to do, Timothy. Here's the work that's before you, you know, and stand up and do the work that has been given. Turn another page or so to 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 13. Hold fast the pattern of sound words which you have heard from me in faith and love which are in Christ Jesus. Look a little farther, chapter 2 and verse 2. And the things that you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. And then verse 15. Be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Nowhere is there any excuse given to Timothy that if it gets too tough, you just back up a little bit. No, not at all. But instead, steel yourself for the work that's ahead. Prepare yourself. Get ready. And there will be opposition. And don't let someone say, you're too young to be telling me this. You know, Paul is saying, I've taught you. You know the Scriptures. Stand up for what's right. It just amazes me to think of a young man in a position such as that and having to stand for truth. Well, he's not alone. There's others as well. You know, Titus is another one that spent time with the apostle. I don't know exactly if Titus was as young as Timothy in the time that they worked together. And yet, you know, Titus is as well identified as a son in the faith, you know, by the apostle. Surely the apostle was the older one and it had taught and encouraged Titus, one who was younger. In Titus chapter 1 and verse 5, Paul says to Titus, for this reason I left you in Crete, that you should set in order the things that are lacking and appoint elders in every city as I have commanded you. So Paul has gone on. There's other places to go, others who needed to be taught. But he's left Titus now in Crete with a charge. Here's the work that needs to be done. Set all things in order. You know, teach here what is lacking and of all things, and appoint elders in every city. Let me tell you something. I've got my share of gray hair. Half of that has come from trying to appoint elders in churches. It's never an easy task. And I think about Titus being charged with doing those very things. All of these things. I think about Timothy and Titus and young preachers such as that. You know, I'm encouraged, I'm impressed by the work that they were willing to accept. Today, I know some modern-day Timothys that are encouraging to me. Modern-day Timothys who choose to serve the Lord as teachers and evangelists. You may know some yourself. You may know young men who have come through here at times or in other places that have just determined that they're going to be a preacher of the gospel and have gone places, maybe even hard places to go. I have noticed. We've got this just backwards. I'll just get on my soapbox for a minute. So very often you see young men with little experience and knowledge even sometimes going to places where there needs to be an older man, going to a church that has no elders and little spiritual leadership perhaps, because that's a church that will take them in. And as opposed to an older man going to a place like that, because he's somewhere preaching for a larger congregation. That works out that way so often, doesn't it? I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying something to think about. But it impresses me all the more when there are young men who are willing to step up to the responsibility because they want to preach the gospel of Christ so bad that they'll go wherever they can go, you know, to have that opportunity and to do that. I want to introduce you tonight in this lesson to three young men that have been very impressive to me. And my reason for wanting to do that is because I want you to be encouraged by some of the things that these young men have done, and I think you will be. As I've said, you have probably known some young men who have come along at times or you've seen them go into the work of preaching and have been encouraged by that. Some of these, I see some young men, or I've known some young men that aren't so young anymore, still faithful to the Lord, preaching and doing whatever they can to teach the will and the Word of God. There was a young man that came to Elkton about 8 years ago. He was brought there by a young lady that he was dating. In time, they became married, and in time, Jason Shackelford obeyed the gospel. This was an exciting time for us because, in a very kind way, let me say, Jason had a lot of steps to take to come to the point of obeying the gospel. He's a good guy at heart. Ashley would have never got interested in him had he not just had a good heart. But a lot of us were kind of concerned about this relationship. And Jason was not a Christian when they got married. And I've never found that to be a good step to make in that order. But Jason's heart was good. And in time, the gospel just kept working on him, knowing that he had to make a lot of changes in his life. He was a rodeo cowboy, for real. He had a job, but every weekend for a long time he was on the rodeo circuit, quite successful at it, actually. And yet that crowd that he ran with in that group was not really helpful in a spiritual way. But in time, Jason saw the light in many ways. Jason became a Christian about 8 years ago, and he was one of these guys that once becoming a Christian never looked back. Never have I seen him look back, but he has always looked forward. And within a short period of time, he said something about the fact, he says, one day I need to be preaching. I was a little surprised. And on the other hand, I wasn't surprised at all, because this was just Jason. And so a while back, you know, we about four or five years ago now, we spent a year working together. He worked with us at Elkton. He would preach a couple of times a month. We would study every week or so. And he had a full-time job, so we couldn't spend a tremendous amount of time together. But he, after a little while, he let it be known, I want to preach the gospel full-time. And an opportunity came up in Loudoun, Tennessee, and he moved there. He and Ashley and their children. And he went preaching full-time in Loudoun and did a good job with that. He just impressed me in so many ways. Never looked back, committed, and is just looking, you know, straight ahead. And in fact, when I announced in Elkton that I was going to be leaving, the elders, and I, of course, I'd already been talking with the elders about this, and they knew what was coming. They'd already talked with Jason some. And so when I announced that I was leaving, they were able to get up and announced, we've asked Jason to come back and work full time with the church here at Elkton. And I thought that was kind of an interesting transition, the way that worked out. And I think that that's going to work out just fine. Jason is a very impressive young man. He is a young Timothy, and kind of one of my sons in the faith, so to speak. There's another man in Elkton, Tennessee, Jim Lovell. Now, Jim, you know, has done a fair amount of preaching in the last couple of years. Jim has preached a couple of times a month, and we would get together some and study. But Jim's got a very full-time job. He's a veterinarian and has a clinic there in Athens, Alabama. But his commitment to the Lord is just so amazing to me. He enjoys preaching, and as in pulpit preaching, and enjoys teaching classes, and is just committed to those things. I don't really see Jim becoming a full-time preacher, so to speak. I mean, he's got his career and has his business and all. I don't see him moving off somewhere to preach, and I'm perfectly good with that. I've said a lot of times, I said, we don't have a preacher training program going on, you know, there at Elkton. I said, for one thing, we don't have a preacher worthy of teaching a preacher training program, so we can't do that. But you know, we've had some guys like Jim where some time for some extra study, some opportunity to do some preaching, a little bit of critiquing, and he's come a long way. And I don't know that we'll ever see Jim preaching full time, but I see a man who has so much elder potential, I can't stand it. And a good wife, your little girl's coming along. Let's just say it's a development opportunity. And don't expect Jim to be preaching full-time. That's okay. But if one day I go back to Elkton, Tennessee, 10 years down the road, and Jim's serving as an elder, I won't be surprised, but I'll be grateful. And so just some interesting things like that going on. That encourages me. There's another young man that spent about a year working with us at Elkton several years ago, Justin Dobbs. He was in his last year of college, and just trying to struggle his way through. It was just a busy schedule, college, working odd jobs to try to help pay for a place to live and wanting some opportunity to preach. And so we decided, I invited him to come and spend a year or two at Elkton doing a little bit of preaching. And we would get together every week and study for a while. And a good relationship there. A young guy, he was 22 years old. And somewhere during that year, which was just an extremely crazy, busy year, trying to finish college, working odd jobs, trying to preach a couple of times a month, somehow he had time to meet Lindsay and decide this is the girl for the rest of his life for him. I don't know how he had time for that, but he managed that in the same period of time. And during the end of our time together, he told me, he says, I've decided, he was looking for a school where he could teach. He was going to get his degrees in teaching. He decided, I want to preach full-time. And as I've said different times to young men, I said, Justin, that is great. I mean, I can't believe it. I'm so happy that you want to preach. That is wonderful. And I said, but what are you going to do to make a living? And he said, I want to preach. I said, that's great. I am so happy. That's wonderful. But what are you going to do for a livelihood? And he wasn't sure how to answer. And I just said, I just want you to think about that. Preaching doesn't mean that has to be your livelihood. And in fact, I'll just tell you, most often with young men, I don't encourage that. I'd rather them work in the secular world for a while, make tents, and understand what that's all about and gain a little bit of age and a little bit of maturity. Well, that's not the route Justin went, and I'm okay with that. There was a church in Charlotte, Tennessee that invited him to come, and he went there to preach. Spent 2 or 3 years there, I forget, and it was a good opportunity just to have opportunity for study, to preach every week and do some things such as that and have those responsibilities. But when we stayed in touch and still do, he let me know pretty soon that that wasn't really where he wanted to be. I said, well, what are you thinking about, Justin? I want to go to Boston. Boston? Why Boston? I already knew the answer, but I said, why do you want to go to Boston? And he says, well, there's not a sound group that I can find in downtown Boston. And I know some Christians that live there, and they go to Tinsborough, Massachusetts, or they go to Providence, Rhode Island, you know, for services. And There just needs to be something in downtown Boston. I said, well, I think that would be great, but how are you going to manage this? And the practical side is, you know, Justin, Boston's a long way from the farm in Hartselle, Alabama, where you grew up. I mean, there's nothing in Boston that is like Hartselle, Alabama. You know, you got to think about that. You'll be hundreds of miles from your family. You know, and Boston is not known as a friendly place in a religious sense. Have you thought about these things? He had. And then the practical side, like, Justin, how are you going to raise support to go there? Because nobody knows who you are. And he said, that's going to be a problem. I wasn't trying to discourage him. But just to think about these things. Because to go somewhere like Boston, this was going to be a hard work. And he and Lindsay had only been married 2 or 3 years. Now they had a baby. And to go somewhere like this, you have to think about these things. But as Justin and I would talk over the next few months, it became clear his mind was made up. He was planning to go to Boston, and things were coming together. And in time, he called and he says, I've got the support. I've got enough to go. And they've now been there almost 3 years. Well, during that time, he's asked me to come and visit a number of times and spend some time there with the brethren and with he and Lindsay. And I truly have meant to go, but I just can only be gone so much. You know, I had some other commitments, as you know, some trips to Africa and some meetings and stuff, and I just never seemed to make it to Boston. And I think that was kind of disappointing, but this year, you know, when my full-time work with Elkton ended at the end of the year, and before I could come here, as you know, several weeks I was away just preaching in some places that I promised to come if I would get opportunity. And so we made opportunity to go. And Sandra and I went up there last month and spent 4 days with Justin and Lindsay and with the brethren there. And I am so, so very glad that we went. Now, I want to share with you now some things about the work there in Boston. Again, in hopes that, well, you learn some things about the work in Boston, but be encouraged by some of those things too. I mean, we know some things about Boston, Massachusetts. It's a historical town, or, you know, from our perspective of, you know, the United States. And there's a part of Boston, the old town, the cobblestone streets and the old buildings, that's all still there, and that's just very real. That's just a part of Boston. It's a place where history was made, we would say. I mean, you can go any place around town and find monuments and memorials to great patriarchs, whether it's Washington or Adams or others that we would know from history. And that's kind of interesting and it's impressive. But that's just part of Boston, is all that is. And, you know, there's right downtown, you know, a cemetery that's made into a memorial as well, where Paul Revere is buried. And that's interesting to us, you know, from a historical perspective and those things. But that's not really why Justin and Lindsay are there. A religious city? Well, not hardly. Even though it's one of the first cities founded in this country, which was built looking for religious freedom. There are some old churches that are there, some with the Old South Church with its origin back in 1669, you know, and there are many denominations throughout the city. But, you know, Boston is not a religious city. In fact, I saw some statistics not too long ago, a survey made across the United States that listed the 10 most religious cities, that's used in a very broad sense, understand, 10 most religious cities in this country and the 10 least religious cities. Well, Boston was in the top 3 of the least religious cities in this country. It's not friendly in that way. But that doesn't discourage Justin. In fact, that's one of the reasons why he went. He knew that before he went. He already understood that, but that would keep a lot of us from wanting to go there. This is where Justin and Lindsay live in this house. They live about 8 miles from city center. And it's a place that serves them very well. It's very expensive to live there. But they needed a house, you know, for their family. They've got 3 children now. And a place even initially where the church could meet. They met here until they could secure a place down in the downtown area. And so this is where they live. Convenient from the standpoint that it's real close to public transportation, which Justin uses almost every day when he goes into the city. And so on Sunday morning, this is just kind of how our day worked out. And this would not be unusual. This is how Justin's many of his days would be. We were out the door in the morning to walk for about 3 blocks on this cold morning to catch a bus, to go to the transit station, to take a train, to get downtown so we could walk a long way. I don't know how far we walked, but it seemed like forever because it was so cold, and to go for a Bible study. This was our Sunday morning. And then we would walk some more to the hotel where the church would be gathering for worship and to meet with the saints. And so this is the type of schedule that Justin would keep very often, very different than the work that we would have in a place like this, or certainly what I'm used to in southern middle Tennessee. And so we take off to make our way to the T, to the transit station on this Sunday. Not too many people on the train early on Sunday morning, but most of the time when you stand in line or in queue, there's a lot of people waiting to get on the transit, whether it's a bus or a subway or the train, wherever you might be going. And then you walk. And what Justin is so good at, what I need to get better at, is even just walking along and making eye contact with people, and I'd be walking along and turn around and he's talking to somebody. And he's just trying to make contacts on this Sunday morning, asking people, hey, I'm meeting with the church here this morning. We have a Bible study. Would you like to come? And he says, you know what? I can't remember that it's ever worked, he said, but you know, you got to try. You just have to try to make contact with whoever you can. It's like on the subway when we're riding. One time it was so busy, we had a long way to go on the subway. There was no place to sit. And so I'm holding on to that pole, just trying to hold my place, you know. And people don't look at each other. You know, everybody just kind of looks at their toes when you're standing in the subway. And next thing I know, Justin's kind of behind me and I hear him. And he's struck up a conversation with this lady that that in time just turns into, I hear he's trying to get a Bible study set up, you know. I mean, he could just do that just so well. And quite frankly, it's something that he's had to learn. And I just kept thinking, I got to get better at that. I've got to be able to do that. We all do. We need to work on being able to look for people that we can just talk to and try to set up an opportunity to study with them. And so we walk some more, and we keep walking. And finally, we come to the Panera Bread, where we're going to meet with some men for a Bible study. It included a couple of the new converts that were made, and somebody that someone else brought. It was 5 or 6 men that got together at Panera Bread, and we ate some lunch and just had a Bible study on our way to services. They don't meet till 1:30 in the afternoon. And so after the men's class we had there, we walked some more until we came to Hotel 140, and this is where the saints meet on the Lord's Day. And as we got there, there were some others who were coming in and greeting one another and setting up the room where we were going to meet for our worship. And it was interesting. It was not unlike the meeting that the assembly, as we gather here, when we are greeting one another and glad to see each other. And it was just a very nice occasion. And I found it to be that way in so many places you go when brethren are happy to see each other. And that's how it was there. And so this morning, there was a young man, Dan Cohen, who taught a class, and then Justin preached in our worship hour. There was 26 or 27 present that day. This represents some who have moved to town, and those who were Christians, and they have joined themselves with the church here. And it includes 4 or 5 who have been converted in the last 2 years because of the work that was there. And it was just good to be with them on that day. That evening, there were many who gathered over at Justin and Lindsay's house, and I taught a lesson tonight, or that evening, about some things we could learn from Africa, from the lessons learned from teaching brethren in Africa, and tried to field some questions about that as well in that evening. And so it was a very full day. But then Monday comes, and we take off again. We left the house about 11 o'clock in the morning. Three studies were scheduled. This was Justin's Monday schedule. Left the house at about 11 o'clock, walk to the transit, get the bus, go to the subway station, get that, and we rode that for I don't know how long, and we get off and we walk some more, and we finally come to a mall where we meet with this guy he studies with every Monday. The mall was just a good meeting place, and we just sat on a bench in the hallway, and we had an hour of Bible study there with this guy, and a good, a productive study. And then from there, we moved on again for another study. This one was at an assisted living place. You know, Justin said, he said, you know, when I first came to town, I couldn't get any Bible studies. And at the assisted living, they were glad to have anybody come. And so, he said, I set up some Bible studies. And this was not a nursing home, but it was assisted living. And there was some very attentive folks there. But one of the things that really kind of came out of this lady right on the right side of the screen, is actually the daughter of a woman who lives at the assisted living. And this is where the study was going. Justin had just set up, after several months, set up a one-on-one study with this lady. And he said, we've got it. This looks like this is going to be a good study. He said, I didn't expect this study. This wasn't what I was looking for. You know, he thought he's going to try to get some personal studies with some of the folks living in the assisted living. That hasn't happened. But this lady kept hearing the study that was going on, and then she got interested and changed her work schedule so she could come on Mondays for this study. And look at where it's going. We hope that works out well. We had a couple of hours to kind of kill in the afternoon while we were in town before we had to make our way to Cambridge that evening for a Bible study, which was a long ride. We had to take the transit all the way to the very end to where you got off because there was no place else to ride. And then we would walk from there about a half mile to the place for our study that evening. You know what I remember about that right there, standing there? It was so cold I thought my ears were going to fall off. I had taken some warm things because I knew Boston could be cold in February, but I was not anticipating. I'm a Yank. I'm from Michigan. I know cold, okay? But I'd forgotten what cold was like, I think. And it was like way cold there, and I always remember that. But anyway, by the time we got up to Cambridge for our study there, it was night, and we went to, Panera Bread. There must be 100 Panera Breads around Boston, and Justin knows every one of them. Because as long as you go in there and you buy something, you can stay as long as you want. And he has studies all during the week, most often at Panera Bread. He's got those little gold cards because he's there so much. He gets punched every time he goes in. In fact, one brother from Elkton, I heard about later, he bought Justin a Panera Bread gift certificate and sent to him, you know, because he goes there so much. But anyway, so we had this study in the evening there with Nate. This was interesting. This has been a 2-year study. This is one of the first studies that Justin got after moving to Boston. And they've kind of gone full circle. This guy is a lay leader in the Presbyterian Church. And so it's been a long study. And now it's come full circle. And now Nate has said, after going through so many questions, so many issues they have dealt with, you know, denominational issues and stuff, now Nate has come back around and he made this conclusion while I was there. And we're leaving, Justin was just beside himself. I can't believe it. We've come all the way back around to where we need to be. And Nate was saying, you know, I want to study baptism again. Because everything you said about baptism when we first started our study that I denied, 2 years ago, everything you have said, I'm having troubles denying anymore. And I'm going to have to look at that again. And he made the statement that this is very important, this is very significant, because I know that if what you say is true, I'm going to have to leave the church that I'm a part of. Because if what you say is true, there is only one true church. And this was significant. This was 2 years. You know, it takes a lot of patience to study with someone that long and to go full circle. But that's where this study had gone. It'd be interesting just to see how that works out in time. So after that study, we left, walked our half mile back to the transit, and to make our ride back to Justin's house to get home about 9:30 that night. And a very long day. This is his Monday. He does this every Monday. In fact, 3 or 4 times during the week, his schedule will be very much just like this. Well, Tuesday morning, we had another Bible study at Panera Bread with Matt. This was another one of those long-term studies, and it was interesting that finally, you know, after going through many, many, many discussions, it came back around to where Matt was now having to consider Bible baptism is something that cannot be just pushed off. He said it's something like that. And I'm going to have to consider what you have said and what we've read about Bible baptism. He had denied all of that in the beginning of the study. And so they kind of went into some other things, building some foundational blocks, and now I've come back around to that again. That's going to be interesting to see where that's going to go you know, as well. Where do these prospects come from? I mean, how do you go to a place like Boston and work up Bible studies? Because I'll tell you, just standing out on the street corner is just doesn't seem to be too profitable there. In fact, there's not been a lot of places where I've seen that to be real profitable in our day. I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm not saying it wouldn't work somewhere. But Boston is just not very kind in those ways. Well, they do meet some people on the street from time to time. Justin goes out and does that. Some of the other brethren are willing to do that too. And it's interesting, some of the other brethren have studies going on their own. I mean, they are all interested in what has to happen as far as preaching and teaching Bible truth. And so it's not just Justin. If it's just Justin, I mean, I'm just going to tell you, if you're the only sower in town, you've got a long way to go. But as Christians, we all have some responsibility here, don't we? That we need to be sowers of the Word. And I can see that happening in Boston. There's some interesting things that are happening. They've done some lectures. Here's something that's worked well for them. Three times a year, I believe it is, they schedule a Saturday. We're at the public library. They can get a room and they do lectures, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 1 o'clock, and 2 o'clock. And they've done some subjects that has gathered the attention of some of the, some of the philosophical type people that are found in a place like Boston. I mean, in Boston you have all these colleges, universities, you have just a lot of very smart people. And I don't mean that in a mean way, it's just you have a lot of folks there of high education, and they think on things on kind of a different level than I do. I'm pretty simple-minded, which you will learn more as time goes on. That's just where I am. You know, that's kind of that's where I am. And I would have a harder time in a place like Boston, I think, being able to have much success. Justin, of course, does very well in that environment. And so they've done these lectures that they've advertised heavily, like on the transit and stuff like that, where people stand there and they read these signs for a whole month every day, and some of them have got interested enough to come and see what it's about. Where they have done lectures on the validity of the Bible. How do we know it's true? What proofs are there? Or lectures on creation. What's the difference between the theology of creation and that of evolution? And kind of approach things in a little bit of, sounds a little highfalutin to me, but it's been effective. Or just what is Bible salvation? And you know, they've got some good context out of that. They've had good studies. From the last lecture, Justin said, I think he told me 40 contexts that over a period of time he has to work through, people that came to lectures and stuff like that. Well, that's pretty successful. That's pretty interesting. And so that's one thing they're doing there. But they have found that sometimes it's just the members of the church, it's people they work with, it's their neighbors in the apartment down the way. Or maybe it's other moms at nursery hour at the library where you have, you know, reading for kids and stuff like that. They've made contacts with people that they've been able to have studies with. That'd be no different here. We have the same opportunities here if we'll just take those. And so you have to look sometimes for prospects. Or what about this place, Quincy Market? Here's a historical building in Old Town Boston. I mean, would this be a place you could make meet prospects? I mean, I walk through it, and of course inside now, used to be an ancient or old marketplace. It's still kind of a marketplace, I guess. It's a food court. I mean, I could go there for a month and eat lunch and have something different every day, and I would enjoy that. But even as we stopped in on our last day there, to have a little bit of time with Justin and Lindsay, and before we left for the plane, there was still opportunity to meet some people. Even as we sat there eating our lunch, and Justin and Lindsay were just kind of saying, well, what did you think about services on Sunday? And what did you think about this Bible study we went to? And what did you think about so-and-so's comment? And we just talked about Bible things. There was a guy sitting next to me that I kind of perceived in time. He was getting closer and closer, and he was trying to listen to our conversation. And Justin was sitting across from me, and I kept noticing him in his eyes. He kept looking at this guy, you know. And we kept talking. I knew what Justin was doing. And so we just kind of kept talking about these things. And finally, the guy looked at Justin, and he said, "My name's Justin Dobbs. What's yours?" His name was Michael. I remember that. And they just started talking. And this guy says, "Yeah, I've been reading my Bible a lot lately." And he says, "You know, I've even gone and talked to the priest about some things the Bible says, and I'm just not sure that I agree with all the answers that Father so-and-so has given me about some things that the Bible says. And what an interesting discussion this turned out to be. And over time, Justin says, you know, and the man had asked some questions. Justin said, I've asked some of those same questions sometimes, and I've studied some of those things. Would you want to meet for lunch tomorrow? We can meet right here and bring your Bible, and let's just talk about some of these things. And so by the time we left, there was a Bible study tomorrow at lunchtime with Michael, who we met at Quincy Market in the food court. Do you think we have opportunities like that? Yeah. Yeah, I think we do. I think we have opportunities just like that. But are we taking advantage of them? I mean, are we looking for those opportunities and times that we can meet someone that we've never met before and even set up a Bible study? Justin and Lindsay Dobbs and their children. Yeah, there are only two children here. Lindsay was 2 weeks away from delivering Amos when we were there. I was just hoping it didn't happen when we were there. I wasn't prepared for that. Justin and Lindsay are a very remarkable couple. It's not been easy moving to Boston. Everything that I warned him about as being hard, he would acknowledge has been hard. But he's glad he's there, and I'm glad he's there too. And I'm glad that Sandra and I went and spent some time with them. My only regret is that I didn't go before then. And here's something I need you to hold me accountable to. You know, there are some younger men that I've tried to encourage along the way in preaching that sometimes need to be encouraged, and sometimes I need to be a little more in tune to going and spending time with Justin and some guys like that. Don't let me wait 3 years before I do that again. You hold me to that. We all have opportunity to encourage others in the kingdom who are preachers and teachers, wherever they may be. And we need to be busy about that. I want to think some more here just for a few moments here as we close. Lessons learned. There are some lessons learned when I think about just men like Justin preaching in different places. You know, sometimes we go to places, and when we're on vacation, we can go to churches sometimes that really need some encouragement. Preachers and preachers' families that really need encouragement. Even sometimes when we think about making plans for a vacation, think about places we might go where the church might be small and struggling, and where they might just be encouraged because we are there on the Lord's Day, and about how we can do that. We can write cards to preachers and their wives in places such that if you're not sure who you can encourage, I can give you some names, and I'll start with Justin and Lindsay and Jason and Ashley Shackelford and Jim and Erica Lovell. Or if you want to reach a little bit farther, I know some brethren in Zimbabwe that I would love for you to write. Just a little card that says, I appreciate your work in the kingdom. That can mean so very much. You know, spending time with Justin and Lindsay, and as well as the other Christians there, they made it very clear they were happy to have us there. And I'm trying to like this part too, that they were happy to have some older brethren with them. You know, the church there in Boston and downtown is a very young group. The oldest man there is 34 years old. And there's some concerns with that. They realize that. They have said, we wish we had some gray hair here. You know, they could use that, and they acknowledge that. And some of the studies I went to and lunch with some of the men and stuff like that, which always turned into a Bible study, twice I had it happen where they said, as we were just talking, someone would say, could we just ask you some questions? And they would just have some questions about various things. They weren't particularly hard, really, but they just wanted some input from someone that had a little more mileage on them, I guess you'd say, a little experience. Sandra went to a ladies' class with some of the girls, and, you know, the same thing happened there. They had a study, and one of them said, could we just ask you some questions about some things? And it was helpful to them. Think about how you might be able to help some brethren somewhere in that way, too. You know, we're reminded sometimes in some unlikely places the gospel can still have an effect. And I think of Boston that way. it's a very unlikely place for the church to grow because it's such an unreligious city, we might say. We cannot limit, though, the power of the gospel. We mentioned that this morning. The power is in the gospel, and there are those who are looking. There are those who have been reading their Bible, and they've come to realize that this is not what the priest has been telling me, but I don't know what to do with this. Kind of reminds me of one riding a chariot long ago who was asked, "Do you understand what you are reading?" "Well, how can I unless someone should guide me?" And Philip then preached Jesus to the Ethiopian. There are opportunities, and there are opportunities right here in Asheville, you know, as well. And we need to keep that in mind. There are inquisitive minds who are wanting to be challenged. There are those who are looking for something. There are those who are knocking. And if their heart is right and they are truly knocking and they are seeking to know truth, well, the Lord will provide a way. And I think we have to be that way. We need to be ready and prepared to help and to teach others. No matter where people are living, this is a truth I have found around the world, no matter where people are living, people are still just people. And in Boston, there are a lot of very bright, intelligent people, you know, critical-minded type people, some of whom are willing to listen to what the Bible say. Don't discount anyone or anywhere as a place to teach or to whom we might teach. Some are looking for answers. So that's just some thoughts about that comes from the work in Boston. And some young men that I've been encouraged by, and some young men that I want us to continue to encourage in the work that they do. All of this, of course, though, in view of the fact that we have opportunities. Right here, Asheville, North Carolina, there are opportunities to teach the lost. There are people, I am convinced, in this city that are interested in Bible truth. Some are looking harder than others. Some may present themselves to us. Some we might need to introduce ourselves to them. But are we willing and ready to be about that work? We need to be. And we have to be. Just some thoughts. Some things for us to think about. Thank you for listening so well.